Chapter 18. Corner. Two or three evenings after the institution of Mr. Weller's watch, I thought I heard, as I walked in the garden, the voice of Mr. Weller himself at no great distance, and stopping once or twice to listen more attentively, I found that the sounds proceeded from my housekeeper's little sitting room, which is at the back of the house. I took no further notice of the circumstance at that time, but it formed the subject of a conversation between me and my friend Jack Redburn next morning, when I found that I had not been deceived in my impression. Jack furnished me with the following particulars, and as he appeared to take extraordinary pleasure in relating them, I have begged him in future to jot down any such domestic scenes or occurrences that may please his humor, in order that they may be told in his own way. I must confess that, as Mr. Pickwick and he are constantly together, I have been influenced, in making this request, by a secret desire to know something of their proceedings. On the evening in question, the housekeeper's room was arranged with particular care, and the housekeeper herself was very smartly dressed. The preparations, however, were not confined to mere showy demonstrations, as tea was prepared for three persons, with a small display of preserves and jams and sweet cakes, which heralded some uncommon occasion. Miss Benton, my housekeeper bears that name, was in a state of great expectation too, frequently going to the front door and looking anxiously down the lane, and more than once observing to the servant girl that she expected company, and hoped no accident had happened to delay them. A modest ring at the bell at length allayed her fears, and Miss Benton, hurrying into her own room and shutting herself up, in order that she might preserve that appearance of being taken by surprise which is so essential to the polite reception of visitors, awaited their coming with a smiling countenance. "Good evening, Mum," apostrophe said the older Mr. Weller, looking in at the door after a prefatory tap. "I'm afeard we've come in rather arter the time, Mum, but the young colt being full o' wice, has been a boltin' and shyin', and gettin' his leg over the traces to sich a extent, that if he an't worry soon broken, he'll wex me into a broken heart, and then he'll never be brought out no more except to learn his letters from the writin' on his grandfather's tombstone." Apostrophe, with these pathetic words, which were addressed to something outside the door about 2 feet 6 from the ground, Mr. Weller introduced a very small boy firmly set upon a couple of very sturdy legs, who looked as if nothing could ever knock him down. Besides having a very round face strongly resembling Mr. Weller's, and a stout little body of exactly his build, this young gentleman, standing with his little legs very wide apart, as if the top boots were familiar to them, actually winked upon the housekeeper with his infant eye, in imitation of his grandfather. "There's a naughty boy, Mum," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, bursting with delight, "there's a immoral Tony. Was there ever a little chap o' 4 year, and 8 months old as winked his eye at a strange lady afore?" Apostrophe, as little affected by this observation, as by the former appeal to his feelings, Master Weller elevated in the air a small model of a coach whip which he carried in his hand, and addressing the housekeeper with a shrill yip, apostrophe inquired, if she was going down the road. Apostrophe at which happy adaptation of a lesson he had been taught from infancy, Mr. Weller could restrain his feelings no longer, but gave him 2 pence on the spot. "It's in vain to deny it, Mum," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, "this here is a boy arter his grandfather's own heart, and beats out all the boys as ever was or will be. Though at the same time, Mum," apostrophe added Mr. Weller, trying to look gravely down upon his favorite, "it was worry wrong on him to want to overhaul the posts as we come along, and worry cruel on him to force poor grandfather to lift him cross-legged over every one of them. He wouldn't pass one single blessed post, Mum, and at the top o' the lane there's 7, and 40 on them all in a row, and worry close together. Apostrophe, here Mr. Weller, whose feelings were in a perpetual conflict between pride in his grandson's achievements, and a sense of his own responsibility, and the importance of impressing him with moral truths, burst into a fit of laughter, and suddenly checking himself, remarked in a severe tone, that little boys as made their grandfathers put 'em over posts never went to heaven at any price. By this time the housekeeper had made tea, and little Tony, placed on a chair beside her, with his eyes nearly on a level with the top of the table, was provided with various delicacies which yielded him extreme contentment. The housekeeper, who seemed rather afraid of the child, notwithstanding her caresses, then patted him on the head, and declared that he was the finest boy she had ever seen. "Why, Mum," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, "I don't think you'll see a many sich, and that's the truth. But if my son Samuel Vold give me my way, Mum, and only dispense with his might I wenter to say the word?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "What word, Mr. Weller?" Apostrophe apostrophe said the housekeeper, blushing slightly. "Petticuts, Mum," apostrophe returned that gentleman, laying his hand upon the garments of his grandson. "If my son Samuel, Mum, Vold only dispensed with these here, you'd see such a alteration in his appearance, as the imagination can't depicter. Apostrophe, but what would you have the child wear instead, Mr. Weller?" Apostrophe apostrophe said the housekeeper. "I've offered my son Samuel, Mum, again, and again," apostrophe returned the old gentleman, "to purwhite him at my own cost with a pseudo-clothes as 'ud be the making on him, and form his mind in infancy for those pursuits as I hope the family o' the Vellers will always do it themselves to. Tony, my boy, tell the lady what them clothes are, as grandfather says, father ought to let you wear. Apostrophe, a little white hat and a little sprig waistcoat, and little knee cords and little top boots, and a little green coat with little bright buttons and a little velvet collar," apostrophe replied Tony, with great readiness and no stops. "That's the costume, Mum," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, looking proudly at the housekeeper. "Once make sich a model on him as that, and you'd say he was an angel." Apostrophe apostrophe, perhaps the housekeeper thought that in such a guise young Tony would look more like the angel at Islington than anything else of that name, or perhaps she was disconcerted to find her previously conceived ideas disturbed, as angels are not commonly represented in top boots and sprig waistcoats. She coughed doubtfully, but said nothing. "How many brothers and sisters have you, my dear?" Apostrophe apostrophe she asked, after a short silence. "One brother and no sister at all," apostrophe replied Tony. "Sam his name is, and so's my father's." "Do you know my father?" Apostrophe, "Oh yes, I know him," apostrophe said the housekeeper, graciously. "Is my father fond of you?" Apostrophe apostrophe pursued Tony. "I hope so," apostrophe rejoined the smiling housekeeper. Tony considered a moment, and then said, "Is my grandfather fond of you?" Apostrophe apostrophe, this would seem a very easy question to answer, but instead of replying to it, the housekeeper smiled in great confusion, and said that really children did ask such extraordinary questions, that it was the most difficult thing in the world to talk to them. Mr. Weller took upon himself to reply that he was very fond of the lady, but the housekeeper entreating that he would not put such things into the child's head, Mr. Weller shook his own, while she looked another way, and seemed to be troubled with a misgiving that captivation was in progress. It was, perhaps, on this account that he changed the subject precipitately. "It's very wrong in little boys to make game o' their grandfathers, ain't it, Mum?" Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Weller, shaking his head waggishly, until Tony looked at him, when he counterfeited the deepest dejection and sorrow. "Oh, very sad," apostrophe apostrophe assented the housekeeper. "But I hope no little boys do that?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, there is one young Turk, mum, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, as haven't seen his grandfather a little overcome with drink on the occasion of a friend's birthday, goes a reelin' and staggerin' about the house, and makin' believe that he's the old gen'. Apostrophe, oh, quite shocking. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the housekeeper. Yes, mum, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. And previously to so doin', this here young traitor, that I may speakin' of, pinches his little nose to make it red, and then he gives a hiccup and says, I'm all right, he says, give us another song. Ha, ha, give us another song, he says. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, in his excessive delight, Mr. Weller was quite unmindful of his moral responsibility, until little Tony kicked up his legs, and laughing immoderately, cried, that was me, that was. Apostrophe, whereupon the grandfather, by a great effort, became extremely solemn. No, Tony, not you, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. I hope it weren't you, Tony. It must ha' been that ere naughty little chap as comes sometimes out o' the empty watchbox round the corner, that same little chap as was found standing on the table afore the looking glass, pretending to shave himself with a oyster knife. Apostrophe, he didn't hurt himself, I hope? Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed the housekeeper. Not he, mum, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller proudly. Bless your heart, you might trust that ear boy with a steam engine amist, he's such a knowin' young, but suddenly recollecting himself and observing that Tony perfectly understood and appreciated the compliment, the old gentleman groaned and observed that it was all worry, shockin' worry. Apostrophe, oh, he's a bad un, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, is that ear watchbox boy, making such a noise and litter in the backyard, he does, waterin' wooden horses and feedin' of 'em with grass, and purposively spillin' his little brother out of a wheelbarrow, and frightenin' his mother out of her wits, at the worry moment when she's expectin' to increase his stock of happiness with another playfeller, oh, he's a bad one. He's even gone so far as to put on a pair of paper spectacles as he got his father to make for him, and walk up and down the garden with his hands behind him in imitation of Mr. Pickwick. But Tony don't do such things. Oh no! Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no! Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Tony. He knows better, he does, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller. He knows that, if he was to come sich games as these, nobody wouldn't love him, and that his grandfather in particular couldn't abear the sight on him, for which reasons Tony's always good. Apostrophe, always good, apostrophe, echoed Tony, and his grandfather immediately took him on his knee and kissed him, at the same time, with many nods and winks, slyly pointing at the child's head with his thumb, in order that the housekeeper, otherwise deceived by the admirable manner in which he, Mr. Weller, had sustained his character, might not suppose that any other young gentleman was referred to, and might clearly understand that the boy of the watchbox was but an imaginary creation, and a fetch of Tony himself, invented for his improvement and reformation. Not confining himself to a mere verbal description of his grandson's abilities, Mr. Weller, when he was finished, invited him by various gifts of pence and halfpence to smoke imaginary pipes, drink visionary beer from real pots, imitate his grandfather without reserve, and in particular to go through the drunken scene, which threw the old gentleman into ecstasies, and filled the housekeeper with wonder. Nor was Mr. Weller's pride satisfied with even this display, for when he took his leave he carried the child, like some rare and astonishing curiosity, first to the barber's house and afterwards to the tobacconist's, at each of which places he repeated his performances with the utmost effect to applauding and delighted audiences. It was 9:30 when Mr. Weller was last seen carrying him home upon his shoulder, and it has been whispered abroad that at that time the infant Tony was rather intoxicated. I was musing the other evening upon the characters and incidents with which I had been so long engaged, wondering how I could ever have looked forward with pleasure to the completion of my tale, and reproaching myself for having done so, as if it were a kind of cruelty to those companions of my solitude whom I had now dismissed, and could never again recall, when my clock struck 10. Punctual to the hour, my friends appeared. On our last night of meeting, we had finished the story which the reader has just concluded. Our conversation took the same current as the meditations which the entrance of my friends had interrupted, and the old curiosity shop was the staple of our discourse. I may confide to the reader now, that in connection with this little history I had something upon my mind, something to communicate which I had all along with difficulty repressed. Something I had deemed it, during the progress of the story, necessary to its interest to disguise, and which, now that it was over, I wished, and was yet reluctant, to disclose. To conceal anything from those to whom I am attached, is not in my nature. I can never close my lips, where I have opened my heart. This temper, and the consciousness of having done some violence to it in my narrative, laid me under a restraint which I should have had great difficulty in overcoming, but for a timely remark from Mr. Miles, who, as I hinted in a former paper, is a gentleman of business habits, and of great exactness and propriety in all his transactions. I could have wished, apostrophe my friend objected, that we had been made acquainted with the single gentleman's name. I don't like his withholding his name. It made me look upon him at first with suspicion, and caused me to doubt his moral character, I assure you. I am fully satisfied by this time of his being a worthy creature, but in this respect he certainly would not appear to have acted at all like a man of business. Apostrophe, my friends, apostrophe said I, drawing to the table, at which they were by this time seated in their usual chairs, do you remember, that this story bore another title besides that one we have so often heard of late? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Miles had his pocketbook out in an instant, and referring to an entry there, rejoined, certainly. Personal Adventures of Master Humphrey. Here it is. I made a note of it at the time. Apostrophe, I was about to resume what I had to tell him, when the same Mr. Miles again interrupted me, observing that the narrative originated in a personal adventure of my own, and that was no doubt the reason for its being thus designated. This led me to the point at once. You will one and all forgive me, apostrophe I returned, if for the greater convenience of the story, and for its better introduction, that adventure was fictitious. I had my share, indeed, no light or trivial one, in the pages we have read, but it was not the share. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.